Blog Talk Radio. Hi, I'm Cindy Sansone Braff, author of Grant Me a Higher Love, How to Go from the Relationship from Hell to One That's Heaven Sent by Scaling the Ladder of Love. That's a big title. It's a big book. Love's a big topic. The music you heard at the beginning of the show is called Eagerly Pleased, composed with love by my nephew, Miles DeBastian. Thank you for joining us tonight. I'm a woman on a mission, and that mission is to have you and everyone else have the best love life possible in this new millennium. But before this can happen, you're going to have to learn a few new tricks. Joining me tonight, I'm so glad that Kim is back. Everybody did miss her last week. She needed a little mental health day, and we're glad that she took it. I think Nicole and I could have used a mental health day, but that's another story. Now, Nicole is a beautiful young woman, a writer, an entrepreneur, and a lesbian, not necessarily in that order. And she's here to share her love stories and more stories with us. She's the voice that will make all of us women stop blaming everything on the opposite sex, since Nicole knows women are making some of the same kinds of mistakes in their relationships with each other. Kim's a beautiful woman as well. She's a divorced mother of two. She will share the secrets that she's heard men utter about love, relationships, and marriage. And she's learned some of this from being a topless dancer in a gentleman's club. And now she's also a hairdresser, so she gets to hear the women also talking quite a lot, so her viewpoint is definitely expanding. Please feel free to call in and join us tonight. We do like your feedback. 646-929-0958. Before we get started, I do want to thank all of you who've been voting for me for the best psychic in Long Island Press. I'm getting a lot of emails from you. I do appreciate it. I know sometimes the website at Long Island Press is not the easiest to maneuver through, but if you take a minute to do it, we're managing to vote. Thank you so much. Tonight's radio show is going to be really interesting. I hope it's fun. I hope you feel better about yourself after you listen to it. We have to learn to love and forgive ourselves and stop beating ourselves up. Most of us are a lot easier on others than we are on ourselves. We do one thing wrong, we beat ourselves up over and over. You're never going to have a happy and healthy relationship with another person if you don't start being kinder and more loving to yourself. Now, I don't know if Nicole and Kim came up with any tips that they might want to start with, and if they don't have any, I'll certainly jump in. But Kim, I know you've been doing a lot of soul searching and a lot of healing this year, and you've had a very hard year. You've had many losses this year, but you still always manage to come up on top. So do you have any hints or tips you can give us on how we can start loving ourselves better?
Nicole, I'm going to let you answer this one first.
Wow, you just totally threw me under the bus.
Do you want
honestly,
me to start?
No, that's fine. See, I'm just trying to get my mind out of the gutter, but at this point, screw it. I think that the best way that you could start learning to love yourself is to truly love yourself. I personally love myself 2 times a day, and I know that Kim has been definitely
all
loving
right.
herself this year.
I know nothing of that talk.
Well, that, I think, is a healthier thing to do than some other activities we might engage in. So, yes, loving ourselves is an important, important thing to be doing. Now, for most of us, love thy neighbors thyself. We've been taught that a lot. But this can be a really scary concept if you're the kind
yes,
of person
it can. Go
who
on.
Is your own worst enemy, beating yourself up for every transgression, error, or mistake. Most of us are much harder on ourselves than we'd ever dream of being to anyone else. Now, we have to learn to love thyself as thy neighbor. We have to be a little kinder to ourselves. You know I can really, really get upset over the slightest thing that I might do wrong. And meanwhile, if someone does something really, really much worse, I'm just like, oh, it's okay, you didn't mean it, it's fine. So I'm trying to also cut myself a break here, especially during these days, which seem to be so hectic. And you know, I'm always seeming to not dot an I or cross a T, even though I'm trying my best. Now, loving yourself, there are some simple things that we can do. One of the, probably the most important way to begin loving yourself is to stop criticizing yourself. we all tend to really judge ourselves really hard. You know, sometimes we can just really, you know, see all the things that are wrong about ourselves. You know, a lot of this comes when we're growing up, and, you know, if we've had parents who haven't been the most nurturing, we hear a lot of bad things, a lot of things like, you know, you're a bad girl, you're being bad, you're stupid, you're sloppy, you're always so dirty, you're worthless. We hear a lot of that when we're growing up, and sometimes it just sort of beats up our self-esteem, and we can be really, really critical of ourselves. And you know, sometimes when you're getting ready to go out, you know, you look, oh, God, do I look okay? This looks bad. This looks this, whatever. But, you know, if you see your friend, you just look at them and say, oh, God, you look so great. You know, you look wonderful. So I can be very hard on myself and criticize myself. I don't know if Kim or Nicole does that, but I can be very critical of my art. You know, writing my book took 4 years because at least the last year and a half I was so afraid there was going to be one tiny little mistake. You know, so it was, you know, after a while, getting impossible for me to move forward because I was being too hard on myself. And if it were someone else's book, I would have probably 6 months before that said, it's fine, it's good, get it done, get it out of here. So are you guys sometimes too critical of yourselves?
Well, I have to say, some years ago, I actually had a mentor-type person, and I would criticize myself a lot, like, I'm a jerk, I'm, oh, my God, I did something so stupid. And he said, listen, Kim, I never want to hear you say another bad word about yourself. And he kept reminding me of this, you know, day after day, week after week, until I practiced the art of not doing it anymore. And even when I hear other people say, I'm such a jerk, I say, please don't say that in front of me. Don't beat yourself up in front of me because it's not necessary because you're not a jerk. We all do silly things and we can laugh at ourselves, whether it's something so tremendous or something so insignificant. I think it's easier to learn to laugh at yourself. And for me, even when something's not perfect, I just say it's rustic or, you know, it adds character, you know.
It adds character.
It was funny today. I had discussed with somebody. I said, oh, you know, I'm so due for Botox. And he said, what do you need Botox for? And he said, that little wrinkle adds character. And I kind of laughed because I heard my words coming back at me, which I didn't think was so funny at the moment. But it's
after
true,
a while,
you know.
Do earn some of those wrinkles. I mean, some of them,
yeah,
you know, sometimes it's that. You know, you smile. I don't mind the smile lines. We smile a lot. Sometimes we've had a hard life. There's frown lines. There's other lines. Some of it just sort of shows a little bit of map of our life. And, like, you would probably notice that more than someone else might be noticing something. And, you know, we tend to really be hard. Women tend to be very hard on themselves physically, you know, more than I think men. If you ever notice, like, men, you know, they gain a little weight. They think they look good. They don't notice it. Women gain 5 pounds, they're like, oh, my God, it's, you know, the worst thing that ever happened. So, you know, perhaps it's a cultural thing, but all of us could be a little gentler to ourselves about ourselves, a little less critical. And sometimes if you're going to love yourself, you might have to remove yourself from the people in your life who are very critical. You know, we who are old souls are very loyal. We're loyal to a fault. But, you know, if you have a friend or even a family member who tends to make you not feel very good about yourself because every time you see them, you know, they have something critical to say to you. After a while, you might need to remove yourself from those kinds of people. You know, sometimes they are, you know, a brother or a sister or, you know, a mother, a father, whatever. It's not that easy to get yourself away from them. But you could also understand that sometimes it's coming from a place of jealousy or envy. Or just
well, I always say that people that are very critical, they don't really like themselves that much, and they kind of project their thoughts on to somebody else about themselves. If you love yourself, you begin to see the beauty in others more so. And I always say I work in an industry, the beauty industry as well as the topless bar industry, where, you know, everybody's supposed to be beautiful. And I always say there's somebody for everybody. There is beauty in every single person that you meet, whether it's on the inside or the outside. Sometimes the beauty on the inside makes them more beautiful on the outside. So if you could really focus in and hone on that for yourself and like all the positive things about yourself and kind of let go of the negative thoughts about yourself, well, they'll come in and they'll slip in. It's kind of reprogramming your thoughts.
It is.
Well, it's also good to practice that with the outside world. You know, don't only think about yourself and try to find things within yourself that, you know, that make you happy, but try to look at something that you think is absolutely just hideously ugly and try to find something beautiful in it. You know, it doesn't matter what it is, but just try to look at what, you know, other people would say is unattractive. You know, it could be a rock, it could be a tree, it could be anything, and find beauty in it. And if you can start finding that beauty with things on the outside world, it becomes really, really easy to see those things within yourself and to find those things within yourself.
Absolutely. And if you remember in the book, I have the concept that I brought up that was from Thomas A. Harris, MD, the author of the book, I'm Okay, You're Okay. You know, a lot of people operate from not the place of I'm okay, you're okay, which is really a healthy mindset where you're good and they're good. We often come from you're okay, but I'm not okay. If we're very critical of ourselves, we tend to look at everybody else as being the things they do are okay, but I'm not okay. Other times we come from a place where, you know, I'm okay, but you're not okay. You know, everybody, you know, those are the kind of people that are really critical. They're the ones who do everything right. They dress right. They have everything right. They're the ones who know how to do everything perfectly and nobody else does it right. Those people can make us very uncomfortable. So if you're near someone who, you know, everything you do is not good enough, you can really start feeling not very okay about yourself. Other people are like, I'm not okay, and the rest of the whole stinking world isn't okay either. I mean, those are really, really the most evil people in the world. They just sort of hate everybody, themselves and everybody else too. But if we can all strive for that sort of I'm okay, you're okay, it really feels nice when you're near someone who feels like you do things right, and even if it's different than the way they do it, they make you feel really good about yourself. So surrounding ourselves with people who are positive is an important thing. Because negativity is a very contagious emotion.
It's amazing. I always say misery loves company.
Oh, yeah.
And it is so true. Even being around a lot of people all the time, I mean, I picked up a couple more days at the salon recently.
Great. Just good
keep
for you.
Busy. Yeah. I only have one day to actually get to love myself and be with myself for a couple hours anyway. And it's so amazing how... a lot of the women and a lot of men I meet, they talk about a lot of miserable things going on in their life. And I said, well, what's good? What's good? You have your health. It sounds so cliche. You have your health, the health of your children. If you can focus on these positive things and kind of let all the negativity go by the wayside, you know. And I notice a lot of people kind of group together. People in bad relationships tend to hang out with people in bad relationships so they can bitch and complain about their bad relationships instead of perhaps saying, well, maybe it's not the most perfect relationship, but I could see some positive things in the person I'm with and some positive things about, you know, the person I am. And I even told somebody today, I said, you know, I haven't been in a relationship for a very long time, but today I'm happy with who I am because I'm the best person that I can be today.
Right, and that's the whole thing, that comes from a place of self-love and caring for yourself and feeling that even though you're not in a relationship, you're still very vital. I mean, I have one client, and she's always complaining she doesn't have anybody in her life, and you just, you know, without a man, you don't have any, you know, definition, you need a man in your life. It's such a sad place to be that she doesn't feel complete and whole by herself. And, you know, that's when we really have a relationship with ourselves. I mean, I'm a person who likes to be alone. I like to be by myself. I find myself interesting, to be honest with you. I've got a lot of interests, a lot of things I want to do. I don't need someone to entertain me or be a babysitter to me. So if you can start getting your world a little bit bigger, if you're bored with because, you know, you don't have enough people in your life or relationship, maybe you could learn a new skill or, you know, just learning something new is so interesting and exciting. So that's a way we can love ourselves, by not being bored. I mean, so many people are so bored, and that's just a terrible place to be. And I don't think you feel very loving about yourself or your life if you're bored. And I don't think Kim and Nicola to be able to ever feel bored. Their lives are very full.
Very wild, exciting lifestyles we live.
And,
well, you know, and it's funny, I work with women all the time, and they say, oh, my God, you're still single? Why are you single? And I said, is this a bad thing? This is fine for me today. And usually these women that have been in long-term marriages. And I said, well, how's your marriage going? You know, and I kind of make fun of it. And I'm not making jest at them. I'm just saying it's okay to be single. I don't have to have somebody in my life to take care of me, to be with, to, you know. Would I like that? Sure. Everybody has the desire to be with somebody, to give love and receive love. But, you know, these women are just, oh, my God, you're single. Look at you. Why are you single? Why are you single? Look at you. And I'm like, what?
It's
just amazing. So.
And, again, loving with, if you're in a relationship, loving yourself if you're not in one, loving the time that you're not in a relationship, and it gives you time to find out who you are.
And what exactly you want.
And what you want, because a lot of times if you go from one relationship to the next, you tend to take on some of the personality traits or some of the interests or some of whatever that the person you're with has. Being by yourself really lets you define who you are, what you like to do, where you like to go. And that can be a really great time. So if you're not in a relationship, it's a good time to start to get to know yourself better and love yourself. Another thing we can do is stop scaring the hell out of ourselves. A lot of us, you know, have these really terrifying thoughts, frightful thoughts. We tend to get consumed in the past thinking, oh, God, I should have done this. Why didn't I do that? You know, if I'd only done this, then this would have been different. And we're beating ourselves up and scaring ourselves about, you know, our lives in the past and in the future. Like, oh, my God, what if this happens? What if that happens? What if this happens? I mean, you can see it in people when, you know, they go to the doctor and the doctor might slightly hint, you know, the blood work didn't look exactly right. So, you know, my thoughts, and it's taken me a long time to come to this place, is, okay, well, we'll take the next test and I'll see what comes up before I think much about it. And then the next test might come back and everything was just fine. But other people who tend to scare themselves will go, oh, my God, there's something wrong with my blood. And they'll ask the doctor, what could it possibly be? And the doctor may say five things it could possibly be. And they're on the internet looking up all five diseases, you know, from leukemia to this to that. And they're all sudden they have all these symptoms and they're freaking themselves out for a week and they're beating themselves up. Oh, my God, I'm dying. And then they go back to the doctor and say, no, it was fine. It was, you know, it looks fine now. So can we stop scaring ourselves? I mean, can we love ourselves enough to, like, get a little grip on our thoughts? I mean, people are doing it about the economy. You know, they have enough money today. They're okay, but they're, like, worrying about 50 years from now. I have enough money 50 years from now. My God, what am I going to retire? It's human beings have to learn to sort of take it down a notch and not worry so much because the mind can be very tormenting.
Oh.
And it can be done in relationships. Like, you know, a lot of my clients, it's so funny. You know, they'd be so much richer if they had some patience because, you know, they've got new relationships, and the guy didn't call for 2 days. Of course, they need a reading. And I'll say, you know, so of course, I get richer from it. You know what I mean? Sure, your insecurities, your impatience just put $40 in my pocket. That's very nice. But I will tell them, why don't you just wait and say, no, I can't. I'm so freaking out. So I'll say, well, you don't really need a reading. You know, we just did a reading last week, and things look good with the guy. You know, so maybe he was just busy or, you know, he didn't get to call. And, of course, they're freaking out, and then they'll call me back the next day and say, yes, everything's fine. So sometimes we're always looking for the worst all across the board. And in loving ourselves, we learn to be a little bit patient. We learn to see what tomorrow brings. We learn to just be patient with life, that some of the answers can't be known today. You know, how much you want to investigate, no matter how much you want to spend on a psychic to see the future, or how much, you know, you want to obsess about and ask everybody what they think. Some things just need time, and so, you know, if we can really get a grip on our mind a little bit and have a less tormenting mind, I think that would be a good place to start. Don't you think that would be a good thing to start with?
Well, I definitely have to agree. I had actually been speaking with a couple people on Facebook because I'm a Facebook junkie, actually. And I know more people than I ever thought outside of my businesses. And this couple had reunited after 20 or so years. They were high school sweethearts, and they reunited, and they realized that they still love each other. They are married to two other people, and all I keep hearing from them is, well, what if this, and what if that, and what if this? I'm like, you know what, guys? Just be grateful for the love that you have today. it's funny how one choice that you make can change the rest of your life. And all change is good. It might not be good at that moment that it's going on because there's so many other aspects of life to look at, but all change is always good in the end. I mean, they're freaking out. They're having affairs with each other after 20 years of marriage and a whole load of children, but they're just so happy to be together. And I said, well, just take the joy and the happiness that you have. And they're both so beaten up by their spouses, you know, just the horrible things that
these spouses say to them.
And
they're being loyal.
Who would want you? You're fat and you're bald. Who would want you? You have a million issues. And I say, well, you know, we all have issues. It's really how we deal with them today. We can't change the past and how we dealt with things in the past, but you can choose them today.
Right. And again, what we were just saying is, you know, old souls are sometimes loyal to a fault. They're loyal to people who don't deserve their loyalty. If their mates are making them feel, you know, fat and ugly and stupid, it would be an act of loving yourself to remove yourself from those critical people, even if they're your long-term husband or wife. And if you're not going to remove yourself from the situation, then at least heal the situation. You know, tell your mate, no more excuses, you're being abusive, I'm not going to tolerate this, you can't speak to me this way. Try to get in there and fix it. Why people think they have to take that kind of behavior is stunning in its effect.
The one gentleman, he's married for 20 years, and he has 6 children. So I said, gee, when did you keep... Every time I try to leave, she got pregnant. I said, oh, she must have done that on her own.
Yes.
But he said, well, I have to stay for my children. I mean, I can't even look at this woman, and she just treats me like I am a dog. She's so mean and filled with hatred for me. And, of course, there's 2 sides to every story. But I said, well, what are you teaching your children, that it's okay to be a doormat? I can't. What if? She'll never let me see my kids, and she'll take me for every penny I have. I was like, you know what?
And as long as
you
think those things in the laws of attraction, that's what's going to happen. If these people, instead of what-ifing it and worrying, would visualize a divorce without drama and trauma, the children happy, their mates accepting it, themselves happy with their new lover, that, you know, them being fair in the divorce, and it could have a wonderful outcome. As long as you're seeing all these terrible things, that's what's going to happen. So, you know, it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, you know what, Cindy? I was talking to somebody at my store, very similar to what Kim was talking about, you know, who's just, you know, this one mom that comes in, and she's not in a happy marriage. She's worried about how her children will view her, you know, if she actually leaves. Her husband, you know, who I've also met, from what I see from the outside looking in, you know, is not really this very nurturing type of, you know, fellow. He's just kind of very, you know, into himself. And he does kind of, you know, make fun of her in public and says things that you can see that, like the look on her face when he says certain things, how she just cringes, you know. And when we got into this conversation, and I'm going to take this to the fullest extreme that I can, negativity and people that treat you with disrespect, it's like cancer, okay? If you have negativity within you and you allow somebody to constantly disrespect you, it's like having a tumor. If you go to a doctor and the doctor says, I removed most of the tumor but not all of the tumor, that's not going to be satisfactory for you unless he gets the rest out. So the negativity is the same thing. You need to remove, like you said, remove yourself from the negative situation. You need to process and release your emotions and release your past. Look for your growth lessons where they're available and just get away from it, because that's the only way that love and happiness will exist.
Right, and because some of these people may have married young, may have come from, and probably did, come from very dysfunctional families where they were abused. They don't realize they're still marrying an abusive person, because it may not at first seem as abusive as what they're used to. And it starts this pattern of speaking unkind to each other, mean, petty, argumentative, fighting, bickering. And it becomes a way of life that maybe you were too young to really say anything about it or do anything, or you didn't realize you had the right to do that, or maybe that's how you fought with your brothers and sisters, and that's what you think families do. But 20 years later, you're realizing, somehow this is not what I thought I signed on for. I don't want this anymore. it's now coming from that place of self-love. I will not be talked to by anyone that way. And that's pretty much when you draw those boundaries, when you make it very clear that you don't accept people talking to that way and you make no excuses for it. You don't really care if they're tired, they're hot, they were beaten as a child, they were neglected, abused, abandoned. You stop making excuses for their abusive behavior because you love yourself enough to not tolerate it anymore. And for a lot of people, it takes sort of some sort of a wake-up call, or, you know, finally they've taken it for 20 years and they wake up and they just say, no more. I just can't take it anymore. And it should be from the very first time, you know, if you're going to have a soulmate relationship, it can very easily go down the ladder of love without you doing too much. You're just not saying what you mean what you say without being mean about it. The first time your soulmate or you talk to your soulmate in a harsh, unkind, nasty, mean way is the time when you have to step back and say, why am I doing this? This is not acceptable. You have to apologize and not do it again. And this is the whole point. Once we accept the person talking to us once, you know, people are creatures of habit. One time you let your kids, you know, Kim, you have young children. The first time you let them be okay that they can curse you out or be mean to you is the way it will be from that day forward. You know, and as a parent, you know, we have to kind of draw our limits. And I know when Shauna was a teenager, she could be really murder. And sort of on her 18th birthday, she did one of her famous things, cursing me out. And on her 18th birthday, I said, well, that's it, Shauna. You can just, you know, you've got the clothes on your back. You can just sort of, you can leave here. And I really never want to see you again. Have a very nice life. And she said, you can't do this. I'm in high school. How can you do this to me? And I said, my legal obligation is done too. If you're going to stay in my life, you are not permitted to talk to me this way anymore. And it really was a wake-up call for her, and she really did change. But up until I really had that leverage to do that, she was behaving in a way that she thought she could get away with. So it really is drawing the boundaries from the very first time.
You know, even in my past marriage, one thing we didn't do was call each other names. We just didn't do it. There was a lot of loud talking on his part, because he's a loud talker.
He's a loud talker.
But one thing we didn't teach our children is to call each other names. You know, my children don't call each other names. They wouldn't dare call me a name at this point, but they're still preteens. I have time for that. But they didn't learn that from us. And still to this day, I might think it. But I don't say what I'm thinking all the time. You know, I might think it very strongly in my mind, without a doubt. But I don't share that. And I try to turn it around and say something positive or indifferent, let's say.
Absolutely. So we can learn to love ourselves by, you know, watching how we speak to others, how they speak to us. We can also be a little kinder and gentler to ourselves. You know, a lot of us beat ourselves up all the time. So it is being kind and gentle to others and to ourselves. And again, patience. You know, sometimes we want everything now. We want it, you know, yesterday. We're not very patient. And we tend to get ourselves anxious. And, you know, if we have learned some dysfunctional behaviors, like overreacting or being hysterical, that makes life a lot harder than it has to be. So we can really unlearn some of the behaviors. We don't have to keep doing them. It can be done. It takes, you know, consciousness. It takes being aware that you don't want to be doing that. You know, we can also love ourselves by taking very good care of ourselves, by realizing, you know, the body's a holy temple. Human beings are creatures of habits. You might as well cultivate healthy habits. So, you know, when you're going through a rough time, rather than self-destruct by, you know, smoking more, drinking more, overeating, you could start going for a walk, eating healthier foods, being a little bit conscious that you're going through a rough time and being kinder to yourself and your body. And, you know, by teaching your children to take care of their bodies from the time they're young is a very important thing to do. I know, Kim, you're very conscious of your kids eating healthy foods, and they're, you know, they seem to get a lot of physical activity. So I think you're teaching your children to love their bodies and care for them
every day. Although we do have cookies in the house all the time.
Cookies are good.
That's more for me.
Cookie destroyed. I had a neighbor, and I was telling TJ this story not too long ago, that when I first moved into my neighborhood, Shauna was about 10, and her children came over, and I gave them each a cookie. And the mother had not even met me yet, and she came over screaming at me that I was going to make her children fat. And anybody who knows me knows I've never been fat. And I said, no, I don't think giving them one cookie is going to make them fat. If you don't give them cookies, they're going to really start, like, being these, like, little cookie bandits looking for wherever they can. Anyway, years later, I found out because her dog went under the mother's bed in that house and dragged out all these cookies and candies. She had all this food under her bed, and she became quite obese, and so did both the kids. And, you know, it's one of those things, yes, you need to let your children have some cookies.
Well, I do have my secret candy stash, and they're not like that. But they do take care of their bodies. It's very important.
Well, if you teach them that, you know, in this day and age, and all of you who know me know, I am very aware of how much drug abuse is on Long Island, how much heroin and other things. If our children are learning to love their bodies and treat them like a holy temple, they're going to be less tempted to do something really destructive to their bodies. And, you know, so loving yourself is caring for your body, you know, caring for your mind, sometimes just taking some time out for yourself, loving yourself enough to say, I can't take care of anybody else today. I can't do for anybody else. I need to take some time out for just me. And I think that's what Kim did last Thursday. You sort of took this mental health day, which is a way of loving yourself. You realized, you know, you had just had your mother pass away, and it was a hard couple of weeks, and you just needed to give yourself some time and space. So that's an important thing.
And it's funny because I wasn't going to do it because I did feel a little guilty about doing something that was fun. And I said, you know what? I still have my life. I still have my life, and I'm going to go out and I'm going to have a good time. And, you know, I did shed a couple tears during the evening for different reasons, but it was a great time, and I was with a really close friend of mine, and we really, you know, we got to talk and spend time together and kind of just be us, you know, and not really worry about everything that was going on around us.
And that's true. And we can love ourselves by, if we know that we are going through a particular hard time, maybe we need to ask people for help. You know, you can't go through this all by yourself, so, you know, you need to ask your friends for help to be there for you. Sometimes you need to seek a therapist, or you need to get some kind of spiritual guidance or something to get you through. And it's loving ourselves to know, hey, I'm not doing so good. You know, if you realize, when people realize they're falling into a depression, or they're having a great deal of anxiety, or they're not able to control their behaviors, if you love yourself enough and you love the others near you to start seeking the help that you need, it's important to realize you don't have to go through everything all by yourself. There is a support system out there for you. And whether it be a friend or a paid professional, whatever you need, it is important to seek that. We also have to, you know, sometimes do some practices that make us feel peaceful inside. You know, some people like meditation, some people find exercise or yoga or Pilates or going for a bike ride or a walk. Those things are really good for you. And most of us know the things that make us feel peaceful and loving. So, you know, if you can find the things that you like to do and do them on a regular basis, it can be really, really helpful. We can also learn to praise ourselves a little bit. You know, if we've done something good, it's okay to acknowledge it. Old souls are very humble. They have a great deal of humility. They often don't see their talents or know their skills. You know, they'll just say, oh, that's okay. Oh, it wasn't much. It was just nothing. You know, you need to, if you finished a project. You know, when I finished my book after 4 years, I was so happy. I was so happy. I was just praising myself, saying, this is great. I actually finished it. I can't believe it. It's wonderful. I took a little moment in time, maybe just a day, to just rest and do nothing, which I hadn't done ever. So it was a wonderful day that I gave myself. So again, loving ourselves is just giving ourselves time and space. And if you're sick, I know a lot of people are sick right now. There seems to be a lot of colds and things going around. Loving yourself is just taking it easy that day when you're not feeling well. Not pushing yourself so hard, not doing a million things, you know, we can wait till the next day. So, Nicole, do you have any hints what you do? Make yourself.
Yeah, I watch. I watch the signs. You know, I mean, like, because just like you said, with the cold and everything. You know what? I didn't think of it as, oh my God, I'm getting sick. I thought of it as, this is the universe's way of telling me, Nick, you need a break. So take one. You know, and it's kind of like the universe's way of just kicking me in the butt and forcing me to do that. You know, I'm completely on point with what you said earlier as far as self, you know, as far as your self-criticism. But also keep in mind that I'm going to put this in terms of people that I actually know. There's somebody that I know that I'm fairly close to who constantly makes fun of herself. She's constantly berating herself over every little thing. And then she gets upset when other people do it to her, you know, and make fun of her for the same exact things that she just made fun of herself for. If you don't want other people to speak to you in a certain way, don't speak about yourself in that way, because in a way, because you're putting it out there that way, you're giving other people license to say exactly what it is you are. And, you know, you really shouldn't give anybody license to be disrespectful or to be hurtful to you. And you most certainly shouldn't try to kind of mask your own, you know, feeling about something by just putting it out there, you know, for everybody to see. Like I said earlier, you have to process your emotions, you have to release your emotions, and you have to realize that your emotions are your body's way of you know, reacting to things that you're feeling. And once you release them, they're gone, they're out there, they're away from you, and you know, you can be more positive and more kind to yourself, and you can just grow to have more love for yourself, you know. And I think that if, especially if you're in a position like me and like Kim, where, you know, we're on this journey to look for love and to find love, I think that the first step is to just see what you want in another person, see what you want to be in yourself, and fall in love with yourself first. You know, think about what makes you you, and nurture yourself and embrace yourself and accept everything that you are and everything that you're not and everything that you want to become and everything that you don't want to become. And change from your shortcomings and be gentle and kind to yourself about it.
Right, and be forgiving, because most of us are forgiving of other people. Sometimes, you know, I personally forgive people way too soon. You know, a drunk driver runs over me and the Mack truck's on top of me. I'm like, and I'll say, I forgive you. Not exactly. There's a couple other steps. Like, you know, I might have to go to the hospital, get healed, go to physical therapy, sue this person, go through a long court battle, put him in jail, get compensation, and then say forgiveness. But I tend to forgive way too quickly. But I don't tend to forgive myself that easily. So perhaps the forgiveness lesson for most of us is really going to be learning to forgive ourselves, not to beat ourselves up over the head when we've made a mistake, when we've made a poor choice. We're all going to make mistakes. We're all going to make poor choices. You know, God says make mistakes, make many mistakes. Just don't keep making the same ones over and over, hopefully. But we're all going to sometimes do something not right. We're going to get in an accident that, you know, we weren't paying attention when we were driving, and thank God it wasn't that bad an accident, but now you got a big dent in your car, whatever it is. We're all going to do these things. And, you know, learning to forgive ourselves and move on from it and not keep beating ourselves up is very, very important. You know, one of the things I find in my clients is a lot of the misery is that they're just, you know, they married the wrong person. They're beating themselves over the head about it. They're, you know, being loyal to a fault. They're angry at themselves. Instead of just trying to correct the situation, it's not a good marriage. You've made a mistake. You made a poor choice. Get out of it. Move forward. You know, look forward.
You know, Cindy, and I do have to stress the importance of this. And I'm not a tremendous advocate of divorce, and I'm really not, even though I've been divorced twice. But that's me. I wasn't going to settle for anything less than what I thought I wanted or deserved. If you do decide to part, sometimes in parting and really getting to know yourself and really starting to love yourself, and perhaps that other person is doing the same thing, there is nothing says that you can't reunite.
And that's
people break up and make up every day of the week, but sometimes it takes that little bit of time away from each other to really perhaps see yourself more and maybe take responsibility for your own actions. Maybe I didn't do the right thing or whatever. Nothing is black and white. I mean, for me, obviously, I'm not getting back with my husband anytime soon. But everybody's like, oh, you know, I really love my wife or I really love my husband, and that's the person I want to be with, and but they're this and they're that and they're this. Well, how do you want to be with somebody who is so many negative things? If you focus on their positive attributes and you can, you know, contribute those attributes to the relationship, then there's something to work with. If not, then part, see what can happen, and then maybe, you know, it'll be this wonderful relationship in the
end.
And
that's a very brilliant observation, Kim, because I do tell that to my clients all the time. It doesn't mean the breakup is forever, but doing nothing is negative karma, and if neither of you are doing anything to fix the situation, if you wait till God gets in there and fix it, it's going to hurt a lot more. You know, if he gives you to a wake-up call in the form of financial disaster, illness, you know, or some other, you know, horrible thing, that hurts a lot more than you two deciding we need a time out here and we're going to work on our separate issues and perhaps our joint issues and see what happens. But, you know, that's important. It doesn't mean that you can't ever get back together if that's what's meant to be. Now, if you're... Go ahead.
Okay, and Cindy, I'm actually going to interrupt you for a second because we do have a question from the chat room.
Okay.
Basically what the question is that this particular person is beginning to dislike certain people in his business, okay? And he realizes that of course, you know, it does not reflect on everybody in the business, but he's finding himself very, very biased towards, you know, people in particular in, you know, in his field, and he finds it very, very stressful, and he wants to know what he can do to stop his heart from seeing people in this way.
Well, part of it is old souls don't see evil, so perhaps this is a wake-up call for him that some evil exists in our inner circle. Some people are going to be lying to him, or perhaps in this economy backstabbing. Perhaps they are doing things he needs to see. You know, by not seeing them, that's where harm comes to us. But once he sees them, he can begin to change his attitude. Does he want to stay in the job? If he wants to stay in the job, then he's either going to have to let some of this roll off his back, or if the people are talking very negative, he can try to change that conversation around to a more positive note, or walk away and not be part of that discussion. It's really, you know, when you're in a job, and I'm pretty blessed because I've never been in a kind of office position or any kind of job where I'm with the people every day. I've pretty much always been a freelance person that sort of came and went and didn't have to see people, you know, the same people over and over again. Offices or those kind of things can be sort of like families and suffer from all the pettiness of families and dysfunction. So it's learning to step outside those dysfunctional patterns of, you know, who's persecuting who, who's a victim. And he's only responsible for his behavior. You know, if he's happy the way he's behaving, is he saying what needs to be said? You know, sometimes people are so afraid of losing their job that they're not speaking up. And great injustices are taking place across, you know, the workforce. You know, a lot of my clients are doing the work of four people and being paid for one, or being working overtime and not being paid for it, and nobody's speaking up. Is everybody?
Well, I think part of his issue is that he's a male in a female-dominated field, and you know, he loves women, but he's extremely disappointed
in the way women.
And I guess what he's seeing.
Well, I'll give an example of Shauna. One time, she worked in an office, and she only worked there for a few days because they were so mean. Everybody was really mean in that office. Everything they said was mean. They were catty. They were petty. And she decided to walk out of there that she didn't want to be there. And the very next job she got was in an office where the woman who was the manager was such a wonderful human being. And when she would hear somebody be petty, she would go over to them and say something like, "We don't speak that way here. And if you continue it, you won't be here anymore." That's all she said. And people started to be really kind to each other. And that was really such a wonderful thing. And I realized Kishana wasn't going to tolerate the abuse at that office. The universe brought her a nicer place. You know, sometimes women can be catty and petty. No, am I right? We all know that. We've experienced that in a workplace. Sometimes it's jealousies and envy. It's for him to understand historically, sometimes women have been the ones going, it's all men in a place, and there a woman has to walk in there, and they're going to, you know, maybe she doesn't fit in there as well. But he's responsible for his behavior and, you know, not to get caught in the middle of some of this fighting and backstabbing or whatever may be going on. Did he give you specifics as to what they're doing?
No, he didn't give me specifics as to what they're doing. He just basically says that it's apparently a very cliquey situation. You know, and you know, he's the outsider looking in, and he thinks that they're only, you know, pretty much, that they're acting very, very petty, and that, you know, they're basically only out for themselves, and they're really putting him in a position of being the outsider.
Can I add a little word of advice on this?
Absolutely.
Being somebody who absolutely hated my job for probably 9 out of the 10 years that I had been there, for all sorts of reasons, when I took that little break and I came back to the job, I had a whole new attitude. And the attitude was, you know what, I'm going to be here and I'm going to make the money I need to make and I'm going to be as positive as I can and just ignore the negativity almost. And even when I get little petty cattiness or whatever it is, some bizarre things going on, I turn it around and I say, well, I have a job, and I'm grateful I have a job, and I'm grateful that I have money at the end of the week. And I think if you walk into a place that is negative, and it's happened to me at the hair salon as well, which is funny because I don't let them gossip.
Good.
I'm like, well, everybody has a story, guys, and if you wish everybody well, it will come back to you. And I'm teaching them the law of attraction step by step, day by day. And I do this at the bar, which is phenomenal because I have seen such a difference in the last couple months. But I think if your attitude is that of, oh, well, you know, and then just say something positive, well, you know, it's raining outside, make love in the rain, that's my end-all, be-all to everybody. And it kind of loosens things up and people laugh, you know, or, you know what, I heard this great story, or just add something positive and bring the energy level back up. Sure, we can all sit there and talk about how miserable we are. Everybody has a miserable story that they can add. But if we turn it around and just adjust our attitude, I promise it will be a better place to be.
And it will. And there's also a point in which he may eventually seek another job.
And be careful what you wish for, because if you hate your job that much, law of attraction, you might just get fired.
Right, and that happens to be the truth, because sometimes also if we don't have the courage to walk away, or we've been raised by parents who tell you, you know, any job is better than no job, or you never leave a job if you have a job, you know, you just never do that, you never know if there's another job, you know, we might end up getting fired because God's being kind to us and getting us the hell out of there.
And change is good. Always.
And, there. And so, you know, we can always hope for that. Now, I'm going to go back to the book, Grant Me a Higher Love, and the steps when loving yourself. And it's really hard to love ourselves if we're guilty of practicing some of the deadly sins like selfishness and narcissism and envy and jealousy and being greedy. You know, sometimes what's happening in businesses right now is you might be surrounded by a lot of people who are selfish near you or envious or greedy or self-centered, and that makes the workplace hard to be, but a lot of us also have some of those traits. You know, we can all be selfish, we can all be greedy, and, you know, trying to be a better person, if we can overcome some of these deadly sins, if there's traits in our personality that we don't like, if we have a bad temper and every time we freak out with our bad temper, we feel guilty and terrible and we hate ourselves, well, that means you're going to have to take some time to work on that behavior and try to overcome it. If you're doing things that you don't like, it's going to be hard to love yourself. If you're an addict, you will never have a soulmate love. If you're an alcoholic, you will not have a soulmate love, because soulmate love means I heal my issues. Doesn't mean that I'm given a soulmate love and I could still be an alcoholic, because pretty soon you're going to drag that love right down to toxic. So if you have an addiction, you need to heal. And, you know, if you're a spendaholic in this bad economy, that's a really bad thing. If you're a gambler in this economy, it's not good. Go to a 12-step program. Seek help. you know, don't beat yourself over the head. Do something about it. And by all means, stop saying, well, I can't change. Everybody in my family has a bad temper, or everybody in my family is alcoholic, so I have to be one. No, you don't have to be one. It's a new day. It's a new life. It's a new millennium. So if all of us can work at, if we see a trait in ourselves that we're not happy about, I mean, that's what I had to do from the time I was a young child. You know, my father was a crazy lunatic. I'd learned a lot of crazy lunatic behaviors. And I was very little, I was only like 7, and playing with one of my friends, and she broke one of my toys, and I really screamed at her. And she started to cry, and I stepped sort of out of my body for a minute, and I'm like 7 years old, and I said, I'm my father. I'm making her afraid the way my father makes me afraid. I don't want to be that person. And I stopped myself and said to her, it's okay, it really doesn't matter, it's just a toy. And after that, I really changed in my behavior. So even as a 7-year-old child, I was aware that I had learned some pretty dysfunctional things and that this was going to be a long road for me to undo them. But we can see ourselves behaving in a certain way. We can see it happening, and we can stop it. We are capable of stopping the behaviors. Nicole, has that ever happened to you where you've seen yourself with a behavior you didn't like and you were able to stop it?
Yes, I have. I've reminded myself in many ways how much I turned out like my father and my mother. But basically, I kind of embraced being like them for a very short period of time. And then once I recognized it, and once I, somebody very close to me actually, pointed out just how much I was acting like them, I realized, oh, God, I see it now. And once I saw it that way, I just kind of addressed it. I said, well, why am I acting this way? And I kind of just gave myself an interview about it. You know, why am I acting this way? What is, you know, causing me to react in this way? How could I react other than reacting this way? And it took a very, very conscious effort. But eventually I got to a point where I became me. You know, I let go of their behaviors, and I just kind of embraced my own.
Right, and that's right. It's really letting go of some of the past, some of the things we've learned. You know, not beating ourselves up if we can't overcome a certain negative behavior. You know, anyone who's ever had to overcome any addiction will know you're going to sometimes...
Well, I'll interject there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I actually stopped drinking when I was 18 years old. I really didn't have a choice at that point in my life. I was actually forced to do that. And I did stop drinking for 3 years in my life. I was really on a bad path at that point. And
like
my
many
life,
teenagers.
Right,
not,
and
not,
my
not
life did change.
Teenagers.
And I got into a situation where I was in a bad relationship, and that person was a heavy drinker. And I said, hey, if you can't beat them, join them. So I decided to choose to drink again. And in that choice of drinking, I drank 1 year solid. I was beating myself up for drinking in the first place, that I couldn't stop drinking. And every day I just wanted to stop. And I'm like, oh, my God, this isn't me. I don't like my behaviors. I don't like what I do. It's almost like I was blaming the alcohol on my lack of control, which I was the one who had the lack of control. In the long run, I did obviously take my own steps to get myself back on track and sign myself into a rehab and get my life back. And I made the choice to actually leave that person because I didn't want that lifestyle and I didn't want to feel like that anymore. I didn't want to feel like I was out of control in my life. And I noticed a lot of people, and I'm going to say in relationships, I'll use that, whatever relationship it is, they have the bad relationship and then they abuse drugs and alcohol to contend with the relationship, and that's just making it worse.
Yeah, absolutely, because now you've got another problem.
And now you have the other person beating you up, you're beating yourself up, and the addiction is just spiraling out of control. It's obviously not on a very conscious level where people are like, oh, my God, that's so dramatic. And it's really not, but if you have somebody else on the outside looking in, I mean, I can see it when it's happening to people. Obviously, most of the time it's not my place to say it. But if I do get a person aside, I say, and they're, oh, I really need to stop drinking, and I'm like, then stop. If you need medical help to stop, then I convince you to do so, but it's not going to make your life better. It doesn't help your spirit. This is why they call alcohol spirits back in the, you know, 1600s.
Right.
Spirits, what kind of spirits, you know? And I often make light of that, but it's not good for your soul, and it's definitely not good for your mind, because certainly I have done things under the influence that I certainly would not have done sober. And it empowers me to know that I'm in total control of it, and I make the choice every day not to do that. And
Absolutely.
That makes me love myself even more.
Well, that's what I said. We can only overcome any addiction. Even people who want to go on a diet, they think they're very overweight or they are overweight. It has to come from a place of self-love. You love yourself. You love your body enough not to abuse it. Can't come from hatred. Oh, I hate the way I look. I hate that I'm drinking. I hate this about myself. Because that's a different kind of energy. And that kind of hate, and that kind of energy just feeds an addiction. It really has to come from that wake-up place where you say, God, I love myself enough not to do this anymore, not to abuse these things, and to do better. I mean, I have a lot of clients, and they ask a health question, how's my health, you know? And I'll look at the cards, and I'll look at them, and I said, well, how could you even ask that question? You know, you're drinking, you're smoking, you're overweight. How do you think your health is going to be? You think it's going to be great when you're abusing your body? You know, it's almost as if people want God to give them good health, but they don't want to do the things they need to do.
But a lot of it has to do with fear. What if? You know, the good old, what if I stop drinking? What if I stop over? How's my life going to be? It's going to have to change so drastically. Sure, it does change, and it always changes for the good.
Right, and again, these are the kinds of things that loving ourselves is what makes us be a better person. It's what makes us want to be a better person for the people we love. You know, if you're a happy person, if you feel peaceful inside yourself, if you feel healthy and vital, and, you know, you're doing some of the things that you want to be doing, you're actually a happier person. You know, being a martyr is never a happy person. You're doing everything you don't want to do. You know, you're just miserable, and you're making everybody miserable. So some of us sometimes need to figure out, what is it that I want to do? Is, you know, in each day there should be something that we get to do that we really want to do in each day that's just for us. You know, maybe somebody else thinks it's a crazy thing to be doing, but it's something that makes us feel more in tune with ourselves and, you know, more in tune with the inner child. So each one of us has to find those activities. Now, we only have 2 minutes left. I know that, Kim, you probably have some shout-outs.
Well, basically, I just really want to say, when you love yourself, it's better to be in a relationship when you love yourself first, and then it could just bring out the best in both of you. Also, I just want to thank everybody for their love and support. And I'm laying here right now in my big blue comfy sweatshirt and my heating pad, and I'm freezing my butt off.
It's
and
a cold
I'm looking
day.
Forward to a wonderful winter. And I do love you all.
And how about Nicole?
I would just like to thank all of the people in the chat room that I'm actually still going back and forth with as we speak. And I just want to thank all of our listeners tonight, and I hope you guys had a good time. And just like I opened up the show, I'm closing the show. Love yourself. There's nothing wrong with it. And that's it.
Yes, and of course, I'm wishing everybody a happy and healthy week, and Godspeed in your journey toward a higher love. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.